Zephaniah. Zephaniah means hidden by Yahweh, or hidden of Yahweh. The Hebrew word Zephon is that which is hidden by covering it over for good purposes. I mean, it's a technical.
So it's like protection?
Yeah. It's hidden for, like a treasure is hidden to protect it, like a, something's put in a bank vault to hide it, to protect it. The matzah, the hidden matzah. So Zephaniah, the word, means hidden of God. Zephaniah was a prophet, probably at the reign of Josiah. I mean, nobody knows for sure, but he was probably a prophet during the very early reign. Do you remember Josiah started to be king when he was 8 years old? And it was Josiah's reforms that produced the greatest Passover the world has ever seen.
He's the one who whacked out the high places.
He whacked down the high places. So now, in Zephaniah, we have more than likely the prophet who caused the king to destroy the high places. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, before I go on any further, I want to say something. We're going to study, hopefully, Wednesday night, the crown, which is the third constellation that's a part of Libra. And then we're going to take a break for a while, and it just became clear to me through several things that we need badly to study this series that we do called Who is Jesus? There's only one or two of you in the group that have heard it. But we've reached a point where, especially including those that receive them on tape, that you've got to, I mean, you've reached a point where you can't bring any more of your baggage about who he is, what you think he is, into the ball game. And so this is a convenient starting point, because now we've gone in the star chart, we've gone down to the lowest point, which was the cross and his death as the victim. And now tomorrow, I mean, the next point, the next decan we're studying is the crown. Corona Borealis is the name of the constellation. And it shows how immediately after the lowest point of humiliation and shame, i.e. the lowest constellation in the stars, in the heavens, and immediately rises the crown, and how it's every once a day, I said once a year the other time, but once a day at a particular time, its place in the sky is directly over Jerusalem.
Crown.
So that's, we'll study that, then we'll take, I don't know, it shouldn't take too long. Then we're going to study, do this series about who is Jesus, and then we'll come back and finish, hopefully, the crown, I mean, the constellations, okay?
Can you ever see the cross from Jerusalem?
Not since the day, but not since the crucifixion. I wonder where Rick could be.
He's in his office. Fulfilling
his office. So anyway, Zephaniah is a big time important prophet who's never studied. And we're going to try to read through the whole book for a particular purpose that you'll see.
Everybody, you heard to see how long it was.
I didn't.
Well, you know. That's by Harry and Lee and Daryl.
Well, we use the word everybody.
Sort of a generic everybody. Well,
everybody I saw.
There's you, and then there's everybody.
It's like when people walk in and say, "Where's everybody? What am I?"
The word of the Lord. Which came unto Zephaniah, the son of Cushi, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hezekiah, in the days of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah. Now, obviously from this, he's of the royal family. Now, you got to recognize that being like Isaiah was more than likely of the royal family.
Who?
Isaiah, the prophet. Some of the prophets weren't. But Zephaniah was of the royal family. And so when he talked about the princes of Judah, he's talking about his brother and sister, I mean his relatives, the ones that are real close to him. He's not just some guy out in the tootlies. All right. So anyway, the word came to him. And the word said, I will utterly or completely destroy or utterly consume all things from off the land, saith the Lord. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea and the stumbling blocks with the wicked. And I will cut off man from the off the land, saith the Lord. Now this, you know, you got it. The first time Zephaniah opened his mouth, you know, that's the only time it's recorded that he opened his mouth. Maybe the only thing he said is this, you know, 2-3 pages here. And all of a sudden he opens his mouth and out comes, I will utterly destroy everything. And here he's been going to Bible study and he's going to church and talks about God's love. And so he opens his mouth and what comes out? I will utterly destroy, I will consume everything. And so his mind says, you dumb idiot, that can't be God's love. You got to know his mind said that, right? Poor little guy. Got a nice life thing, got a nice thing going. He's raised in a palace, he's rich. You know, got a lot of social contacts. Eligible bachelor.
Lots of babes. Scarves.
Can spend a lot of time in
Garnets
Magdala.
He
opens his mouth, totally destroys his life in one sentence. Not only does he totally destroy his life in one sentence, he has the guts to say, God told me to say this.
Which means if it doesn't happen, he's going to be destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to remember, to be a prophet in these days, if it didn't come to pass...
In his lifetime?
All prophecy is of two natures in the Old Testament. It's all prophecy has to have part of it that comes to pass in his lifetime, in the prophet's lifetime, relatively shortly. And then...
If that didn't come. Can't wait around until he dies to kill him.
No. Cannot wait around until he dies to kill him. Then, if it doesn't come to pass, then that which he spoke is totally wiped off the face of the earth. He's killed. His wife is killed. His kids are killed. His property is given into the temple treasury.
It's like if he was married. Honey.
No, I mean, so when one of these guys speaks, it's not a light thing.
Everything goes on the line.
Okay, so here's what he said. As far as we knew, this is the first time he opened his mouth to speak in the name of God, the burden of the Lord, right? First sentence, I will utterly consume all things from off the land, saith the Lord. Oh, shit. Oh.
What's that?
Oh, this is the result of the Levite meeting, which Harry can explain later.
Who erased Denise's picture?
I will utterly consume all things from off the land, saith the Lord. I will consume man and beast. I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea and the stumbling blocks with the wicked. I will cut off man from off the land, saith the Lord. I will also stretch out mine hand upon Judah. The guys, you got to see what's going on in their minds. Okay, when he says that, that means all the Gentiles and those idiots, the northern tribe, Israel. But Judah and Benjamin were safe. He's talking about their land. You got it? So now, the other guys. And I will also stretch out my hand upon Judah, and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place, and the name of the Chemarim with the priests. Now the Chemarim are the idols, idolaters. And them that worship the host of heaven upon the housetops, and them that worship and swear by the Lord.
He's still wiping out?
Still wiping out. And them that swear by Malcolm.
What does it do about the housetops? Were there idols up on the roof or something?
Yeah, yeah. And them that are turned back from the Lord, and those that have not sought the Lord, nor inquired for him. So what he's saying is you can't do any of this stuff by just hanging around people that do this stuff. In other words, just because you're around some people that seek the Lord, that didn't do you any good. You cannot seek the people that seek the Lord. You understand that? Tara said the neatest thing she's ever said to me last night. She said, what I see now is that I'm in love with God and you're just the icing on the cake. Okay. Hold thy peace at the presence of the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is at hand. Now this was written 630 BC or thereabouts. The day of the Lord is at hand. In other words, it's right there. It's always been right there. It always is right there. That's the point of ripping of the flesh. It's there. Hold thy peace. And again, because if you don't do this, what you will do is you will believe in dispensationalism. The reason dispensationalism has so much attraction is you can say to yourself, well, you can reject, you cannot go to church, you cannot do anything, you cannot seek after God, you can do your own thing, but you're secretly saying, when Russia attacks Israel, then I'll get right with God.
Yeah.
Or, when I see that particular sign that preacher told me about happen, then I'll do it. But we come along and say, today is the last day. All right, that's what he said, same thing. For the day of the Lord is at hand, for the Lord hath prepared a sacrifice. He hath bid his guests. It shall come to pass in the day of the Lord's sacrifice. Now, when is the day of the Lord's sacrifice? What's the only offering or sacrifice that has ever been pleasing to God? The cross. So the day of the Lord's sacrifice was the day of the cross.
So that's the day that he cut off all the men and the fowls of the enemy. Right. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And at the same time, he bid the guests. The guests are ones that put on that garment. The righteousness or the acceptance of that sacrifice is the only sacrifice. You understand? So simple. There's reams and volumes written about these things, about don't ever go to Perkins Theology Library. There's 43 doctoral theses on when the day of the Lord is and what the sacrifice of the Lord means. And what does it mean that he bid his guests? And how come it's in that tense? And they don't understand. They're ever learning but never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now it shall come to pass in the day of the Lord's sacrifice that I will punish the princes. He's talking about, he's one of those princes. And the king's children, and all such as are clothed with strange apparel.
Yeah, that's funny, because I used to see him going, what's wrong with my clothes?
Yeah. You understand what the strange apparel is? The wedding garment, when the guy came into the wedding, he got invited to the wedding, came in, he was there with the wrong garment, the servants took him out, the God Squad, the Faith in Action group, they took him and they threw him out. Had the wrong garment on. From God's standpoint, it's strange apparel. Why? Because it's the covering or the apparel that hasn't satisfied the Father. But don't you see how people have taken these wild, wonderful scriptures and made them to justify going to church in her Sunday best? Okay. That's how they do it. Okay, so he just wiped out his whole family there, the princes and the king's children, and all of this. Because, first of all, he said they had on strange apparel. Second of all, he said that God's going to wipe them out. In the same day also, I will punish all those that leap on the threshold. Now, what does it mean to leap on the threshold? Huh?
Passover.
No, to leap on a threshold means it's a particular rite of pagan worship. It just means you're worshiping. You're doing a dance in a worship for the wrong god. No, of course you guys wouldn't do that. That's good. In the same day, also will I punish all those that leap on the threshold, which fill their master's house with violence and deceit. This is the master's house, and this is the temple. And it will come to pass in that day, saith the Lord, that there shall be the noise of a cry from the fish gate, and a howling from the second, and a great crashing from the hills. Howl, ye inhabitants of Maktesh, for all the merchant people are cut down, all they that bear silver are cut off. Now what this is talking about is, up to this point in the spirit, there was a court of Gentiles in the temple.
Wow.
And they were the ones that were hanging around the temple, and there were the merchants in there. They were getting God's, they were getting, making money from God's stuff.
Was this really happening?
Huh?
Was it really happening too, or was it?
Yeah, it's really happening. That's why Christ drove out the money changers. Yeah, they still, when they had to sacrifice that many sheep and oxen and goats, you got to know some Jews took advantage of it.
So the fish gate and the second are just places around the temple?
Around the temple. And Maktesh is simply the valley right outside the fish gate. That's where these particular activities were taking place. Spiritually, it's what's going on in you. The moment you buy the lie of effort expended, results seen, you are one of these people. The moment, because you're denying grace. Grace can only be manifested in the real, not outside in the... You understand spiritually what's going on? You don't want to be there. You don't want to think in terms of cause and effect anymore. All right. Now, it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem, even the New Jerusalem, with candles, and punish the men that are settled on their lees. Now, what does it mean to be settled on your lees? We had a bunch of Levites that had been settled on their lees.
So you think you've already arrived?
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it. Again, let me talk about how you do wine in Israel. In Israel, what they did at this time was there were vats, wooden vats, that they put the wine into. And as the wine fermented, as the wine prophesied, as the wine bubbled forth, whatever was there, then the wine steward would come along with a big stick and he'd wipe off the top. You know how, any of you been to a winery? You see that crap that comes up, then you wipe it off. And now they have little machines that do it all the time.
But I'm making sauerkraut and it's the same process.
Same principle. But except in because wine is fermenting, there's a bubbling forth. It's a constant bubble. I mean, it's fermenting. That's what causes the bubbling. That's why it's so vital that you always speak with regard to the impulse that's there, without regard to what the effect of it will be. And that stuff will come to the surface and it'll be scraped off. But if you're settled on your lees, you will be that grape that's down there in the bottom of the pit and trying to do everything it can to still be a grape. be worried about what other grapes think of him. Spend a great deal of time shining the skin of the grape. Pretty soon that grape has so many band-aids on it that the essence of the grape, that purpose for which the grape was made, can't come to pass. So now, you don't want to be settled on your lees. The other way to be settled on your lees is to think that you've arrived. Because, in addition to the process of bubbling forth, or again, technical term, look it up, it means to prophesy. Above all things, my brethren, I would that you prophesy. The next thing that happens is, after it stays on that first level for a time determined by the wine steward, or the head wine guy, that's a technical term.
Head wine guy.
He's the one with the thingy around his head.
No, no, that's another guy. Okay, then what they do is it starts out interesting in that at the first level is the highest after the sight. Right? So then they take, and they, after it stays in there for a while, then they take and empty that first lee into the second lee, not this lee.
Settling on your lee.
And then it goes through that process again. It goes through seven of those processes. And finally, when it's ready for the, when it's at the eighth, when that process is completed at the eighth, then what happens to the wine?
It gets drunk.
Gets consumed.
It's better to say it's drunk.
Your purpose isn't to be a nice bottle of wine or a nice grape. Then you're in denial of the process. All of life has but one function, and that's to bring forth the fruit of the vine. If you're back there trying to shine the vine, or trying to shine the grapes, or trying to protect the grape, or trying to stay where you are in this point, or trying to get something, you see, at every point, the mind of the Gentile is trying to protect itself, trying to save its life. At every point in the spirit, you're ever in a decreasing, a descending point until you reach your purpose to be broken bread and poured out wine. You give no thought for your life. So he's taking a candle in Jerusalem, and he's searching for men, or for grapes that are settled in their lees. You don't want to be there when he finds a grape that's settled on its lees. That's right. You got it? You got a little understanding of what it means? All right, back to Zeph.
And we learn the next time we go to the mansion, we're going to ask to speak to the head wine guy.
And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with candles and punish all wise asses. No, that's not what it says.
Might as well.
Oh, I know what it means now. I've decoded it.
That's why you spent all that time in the military. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with candles and punish the men that are settled on their lees, that say in their heart, the Lord will not do good, neither will he do evil.
Which is like the Lord's wuss. Kind of like he's just out there.
He has no power. He has nothing to do with my life.
The Lord is a wuss.
He has nothing to do with my life. I don't see any evidence. Where is the evidence of his presence?
God loved us and he would let little people...
That say in their heart, the Lord will not do good, neither will he do evil. That's the perfect definition of lukewarm. It's the perfect definition of sloth. It's the perfect definition of being subtle in the lees. It's the perfect definition of being immobilized. It's the perfect definition of not knowing the fear of the Lord. Hey, you don't want to be in that position either. There's several positions you don't want to be in here when he's taking the candle through Jerusalem. All right,
this
now we're
is the form of godliness.
Dying the power. The Lord will not do good, neither will he do evil. Therefore their good shall become a booty. You know what that means? Somebody else is going to get them. Their goods shall become a booty, and their houses a desolation. They shall also build houses, but not inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards, but not drink the wine thereof. Wow. The great day of the Lord is near, is near and hasteth greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. The mighty man shall cry there bitterly.
You know what? Whoa. In verse 13, you know, it reminds me of that thing in Isaiah, I think it's 9, where he talks about, you know, you can work your butt off in the vineyard, but it's not going to produce nearly as much unless you know who's producing it.
Amen. Yeah.
Does it make even the voice of the day?
What is the voice of the day? Preaching. Okay. The great day of the Lord is near, it is near, and hasteth greatly, even the voice of the day of the Lord. The mighty man shall cry there bitterly. The day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of wasteness and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. One of the things that most fun I have is I get to read this scripture every once in a while.
One guy stuff out.
No. In all thy vineyards, and these are the people, in all thy vineyards shall be wailing, for I will pass through thee, saith the Lord. Woe unto you that desire the day of the Lord. To what end is it for you? The day of the Lord is darkness and not light, as if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him, or went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him.
That's funny.
Shall not the day of the Lord be darkness and not light, even very dark and no brightness in it?
We have a new kitten, and we brought the kitten in the house, and we set the kitten down, and the kitten didn't know who Matt was, and Matt came out of the deal, and the kitten went, meh, and all of a sudden he ran into Mykonos. And is that Matt said that? He goes, yeah, he ran from a lion and a bear man.
Start over.
But you see what the difference is to know you're in the day of the Lord versus desiring the day of the Lord.
Yeah.
It's the same thing like the fear of the Lord.
Amen.
The same, or the black cloud that the Egyptians saw in the bright
light. Same thing, or the fact that we are always unto God a sweet savor, both in them that are saved and in them that perish. To the one, the savor is death unto death. To the other, it's life unto life. We're sufficient for these things. Okay, now, a day of the trumpet and alarm against the fenced cities, against the high towers. That means anybody's taken a stand. And I will bring distress upon men, that they shall walk like blind men. Now that's what's been happening since the day of the cross. Because they have sinned against the Lord, and their blood shall be poured out as dust, and their flesh as the dung. Neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them in the day of the Lord's wrath, but the whole land shall be devoured by the fire of his jealousy, for he shall make even a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land. Gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation not desired. Now we come to someplace else. Now we come, first of all, the first chapter is about what? About people that are taking a stand. Now comes, O people not desired. Before the decree bring forth, before the day pass as the chaff, before the fierce anger of the Lord come unto you, before the day of the Lord's anger come upon you, seek ye the Lord, all ye meek of the earth, which have wrought his judgment. Seek righteousness, seek meekness. It may be ye shall be hid in the day of the Lord's anger. Now that's our hope.
It's like exactly.
Yeah. For Gaza shall be forsaken, Ashkelon a desolation. And remember, when they talk about Edom and Moab and Gaza and Egypt, I mean, it's just talking in the isles of the sea. It's just talking about those things that surround the promise. And we'll go through and identify them all. Just like when it talks about the Hittites and the Perizzites and all that, it talks about the people, the things that are illegally in the promise. And we'll talk about them. You got it? For Gaza shall be forsaken, and Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. Woe unto the inhabitants of the sea coast, the nation of the Cherethites. The word of the Lord is against you. O Canaan, the land of the Philistines, I will even destroy thee. There shall be no inhabitant. And the sea coast shall be dwellings and cottages for shepherds, and folds for flocks. And the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. They shall feed thereupon in the houses of Ashkelon. They shall lie down in the evening, and for the Lord their God shall visit them and turn away their captivity. Now here's probably the only place in the Bible where it's a good thing that he visits. Because he's visiting on the last day, on the day of judgment. I have heard the reproach of Moab and the revilings of the children of Ammon, whereby they have reproached my people and magnified themselves against their border. Therefore, as I live, saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah. Even the breeding of nettles and salt pits and a perpetual desolation, the residue of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of the Lord of hosts. The Lord will be terrible unto them, for he will famish all the gods of the earth. That's good. That's what's been happening to you guys. All your idols have been getting famished. And that's what I said last night. You may still have some idols, but you're not going to tell me about them. Well, the reason is that because you're afraid to. You're afraid I'll jump on you.
And they're in your start of the day.
Because the foolishness,
they're already down for the count.
Just getting yelled at.
Right.
We're not talking about a very big idol. There's a word thing going on here. This is the third time. Like in chapter 1, it says, I will utterly consume all things from off the land. And at the end of 1, it says, for he shall make a speedy riddance of all them that dwell in the land. Well, I mean, if you're the land, that's good news. He's going to destroy the gods of the land.
Yeah. Well, it gets better here. Let me show you something. Why did God design you with viruses and bacteria and germs?
As a type question.
Jackie, we know the answers now.
But you got to see everything in the universe is black.
Yeah.
And so all of the germs and the viruses and everything that are within your system are just, obviously the thing is that it shows you have to live by grace, that you are living by grace even if you don't know you are. But more important, it shows you that there's all these little dealies in you that are spots and wrinkles in the body of Christ. And they're the little things that cause you to take the stands, and little opinions and hidden ideas and hidden things. Spoken, they are just, you know, they're just pushed off by the head wine guy. But hidden, what you put yourself in is you can no longer love the brethren because you're the judge of the brethren.
That's why you have an immune system.
Yeah, the immune system.
Succumbs to the
surface. Right. Okay. The Lord will be terrible unto them, for he will famish all the gods of the earth. And men shall worship him, every one from his place, even all the isles of the heathen. Ye Ethiopians also, ye shall be slain by my sword. And he will stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria, and will make Nineveh a desolation and dry like a wilderness, and the flock shall lie down in the midst of her, and all the beasts of all the nations, and the beasts of the nations, both the cormorant and the bittern shall lodge in the upper lintels of it. Their voice shall sing in the windows, desolation shall be in the thresholds, for ye shall uncover their cedar work. Now all that means is, whenever you see in Isaiah and here, it talks about the bittern and the cormorant, it's talking about demons.
They're like kind of like vultures.
Yeah.
Like sea vultures.
Okay. And the uncovering of the cedar work means it's the uncovering of the head, to see what the reality is. Okay. This is the rejoicing that dwelt. This is the rejoicing city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me. How is she become a desolation, a place for beasts to be lie down in? Everyone that passeth by her shall hiss and wag his hand. Now, read Revelation 18. It's about the Whore of Babylon.
Well, no, but wag his hand.
Looks like Oli.
Oh. So we got his, too.
Woe to her that is filthy and polluted, to the oppressing city. She obeyed not the voice. She received not correction. She trusted not in the Lord. She drew not near to her God. Her princes within are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves, or ravenous wolves. They gnaw not the bones till the morrow. Her prophets are light and treacherous. Now, that means they gnaw not the bones till the morrow. It's kind of interesting. What that means is they're never satisfied. They never get enough. Because normally when a wolf, if he makes a kill, he lies there and he eats what he wants, and then he lies there all night and chews on the bones. But these are ravening wolves, evening wolves, that have to continually get more and more and more, making merchandise of the souls of men.
Yeah.
You understand?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's pretty scary to understand this stuff, isn't it?
Because you can see it so much.
Yeah.
Her prophets are light. Boy, are they light. You know, Jeremiah, talking about the same thing, says, they say peace, peace, when there is no peace. They say success. They say mixing. They say daub the wall with untempered mortar. Speak to us smooth things. Yeah. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Now, why can they? How can they be light and treacherous? Well, they're treacherous because they're never saying what's there.
Yeah.
They're always simply saying what they think they should say.
Yeah. That's always a motive.
Right. That's in the New Testament. That's called deceit. It's they handle the word of God deceitfully, and the word deceit, you remember, is that technical term that means they add water to the wine for the purposes of commerce. And if the body is the wine, they add water to it, they add the human race to it, for the purposes of making it more, for the purposes of commerce. All right. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. The Lord is in the midst thereof. And again, here we go. In the midst, in the Hebrew language, can easily, just as easily, be translated in, or within. The Lord is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. You remember in Isaiah where it says, a smoking flax will he not quench, a bruised reed will he not break. In other words, he doesn't have anything to do with that which is perceived by the senses. He's not out to make your marriages happy. He's not out to make your husband rich. He's not out to make you have good sex life. He's not out, none of those things. He can't be used. His function is to use you. And in him using you, all the desires of your heart are met, because that's where you were built. That's why I hate it so badly when these idiots, in the name of the God that I serve, begin to talk about what God is going to do for them, and God's got a wonderful plan for their life. Come now and make a decision for Jesus. I get so mad I could... Anyway, all right.
Give it to your imagination.
The Lord, the just Lord, is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Remember what I said? Remember that thing in let me read it. What? Oh, I know that. But I want to read it. No, I want to read the whole. If we be dead with him, we shall also live with him. If we suffer, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we believe not, yet he abideth faithful, for he cannot deny himself. And that's very important, because he's in you. All right, where are we? He's famished the gods. Okay, now we're back over there. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to light. He faileth not, but the unjust knoweth no shame. That's a biggie. I have cut off the nations. Powers are desolate. He's talking past tense, back 630 years ago, before Christ. He's saying it happened in the past. I have cut off the nations, their towers are desolate, I've made their streets waste, and none passeth by, their cities are destroyed, there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. So that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. It's already done. I said, surely thou wilt fear me, thou wilt receive instruction, so their dwelling should not be cut off. However, I punish them. Howsoever I punish them. But they rose early and corrupted all their doings. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. No matter what situation you're in, wait for him until he rises up for the prey. And look out. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Now we're 9. For then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord to serve him with one consent. From beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my suppliants, even the daughter of my dispersed, shall bring mine offering. Now, what is his offering? His only sacrifice. It's the seed within you. You've presented yourself as a living sacrifice. They shall bring mine offering. In that day shalt thou not be ashamed for all thy doings. You no longer have any consciousness of sin or trespass, because the offering you're bringing is the burnt offering. For then will I take away out of the midst of thee them that rejoice in thy pride. And he's taken away. Who's the only one that rejoices in the pride? The high place identity, the abomination. You got it? And thou shalt no more be haughty because of my holy mountain. Not because of you. And who is this holy mountain? They that trust in the Lord are as Mount Zion. I will also leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people, and they shall trust in the name of the Lord. The remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. None! Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad and rejoice with all thy heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. The Lord hath taken away thy judgments. He hath cast out thine enemy. The king of Israel, even the Lord, is in thee. Thou shalt not see evil anymore. In that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear thou not, and to Zion let not thine hands be slack. The Lord thy God in the midst of thee or in thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. I will gather them that are sorrowful for the solemn assembly who are of thee, to whom the reproach of it was a burden. Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict. Who thought the reproach was a burden. And I will save her that halteth, and will gather her that was driven out, and I will get them praise and fame in every land where they have been put to shame. He's going to get them that were driven out praise in the very place where they were put to shame. You got it? At that time will I bring you again, even in the time that I gather you, for I will make you a name and a praise among all the people of the earth. when I turn back your captivity from before your eyes, saith the Lord. Now, all this is simply a matter of seeing. Now that's what the next constellation is about. Is seeing this process, your captivity turn from before your eyes. And you're not only now no longer a captive, but you have a crown. You're not only... Well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 9. The mystery is... Oh. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. The mystery of this crown, this kingship, is the fruit of it, a servanthood, slavehood. That's why the world can never understand the mystery. That's why the Antichrist is always getting faked out. Because he thinks that everybody thinks like he thinks. So when he sees you in servitude, he thinks he's got the victory. You got it? Now watch. Interesting stuff here. I made myself servant unto all, and I gained the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law, not being without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. Now what's he doing? In every one of these cases, he's faking out the identity. He's faking out the God of this world. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. Now, he's not talking about running around and saving people in the evangelical terms. Well, he's talking about reaching out and pulling people out of the fire.
He says, I am made, not I made myself.
Oh yeah, I am made. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Know ye not that they which run in a race all, but one receiveth the prize? So run, that you may obtain. In other words, just be, don't, you know. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now, temperate simply means that nothing controls you. Is there anything that controls you? Well, don't, it's dumb. You don't have to let it control you anymore. Every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fought I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep my body, but I keep under my body and bring it unto or into subjection, lest by any means when I have preached to others I myself should be cast away. Just what it says. That you're not to be ruled by your body. You have the authority to be temperate in all things, which means have every that you're not under the dominion of anything, save love, save serving one another. That you owe no man nothing, including yourself, anything but to love. Most of you, you got 60,000 other kind of debts that you owe yourself. But the key here is that you're running the race to obtain the crown. And the secret is that everybody thinks you got to run this race just exactly right, just exactly the right steps, and you got to get in condition and do all this stuff. Everything we've said, no, that's not the way you do it. The way you get the crown, the way the crown is made manifest is by a servant to all. You got it? Now, in order to read... You had to understand Zephaniah in order we can understand the crown. Because the crown is hidden of God.
You know, I think that's really funny, the little picture you get of some guys running a race and one guy in the race going, no, you first, you ahead of me, please. And you win by being last.
Okay, now I can do the, now I can study the crown. But I just had to make sure that you all understand it was hidden. Plus, I like Zephaniah. So. Everybody got it? Anybody have anything to say? Take it, big guy.